Welcome to Enclave on Air. I'm your host today, Courtney Flaherty. Enclave on Air is a podcast from Enclave, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, Enclave covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. In today's episode, Drs. Philibos Costa and Hari Deshpande sat down to discuss and answer frequently asked questions about chondrosarcoma in honor of International Chondrosarcoma Awareness Day. This included common pitfalls in the diagnostic process for this rare heterogeneous bone malignancy, the central role of surgery as the primary treatment for localized chondrosarcoma, and the potential application of IDH1 targeted therapy, DR5 agonists, and other emerging targeted therapies in this sarcoma subtype.
I am Hari Deshpande. I'm one of the medical oncologists at the Yale Cancer Center, Smilow Cancer Hospital in New Haven, and I specialize in sarcomas along with my colleague, Dr. Philibos Costa.
I'm Dr. Costa. I am a sarcoma in phase one oncologist here at the Yale Cancer Center. And I'm very happy to talk a little bit about chondrosarcomas.
As you know, this Friday is Chondrosarcoma International Awareness Day. And can you tell us a little about chondrosarcomas?
Similar to other sarcomas, when we're talking about chondrosarcomas, we're actually talking about a very heterogeneous group of disease. So initially, like the classical definition is that chondrosarcomas are a type of bone tumor that originates from a cell, the chondrocytes, that produces the collagenous matrix, but usually it's common in joints. And since those chondrocytes tend to be cells that really live in a environment that does not have a lot of oxygen and does not have a lot of nutrients, they tend to be somewhat resistant to the classical treatments that we have. It is a very heterogeneous group of disease. Although we have many diseases that come from those chondrocytes, you have very different grades of chondrosarcomas. Chondrosarcomas are usually graded in grade 1, 2, 3, and they're differentiated. And there's some special types of chondrosarcomas, such as mesenchymal chondrosarcoma. For example, if you're talking about grade 1 chondrosarcomas, meaning that they're low grade, that they are dividing less frequently, they tend to behave much less aggressive than the higher grade chondrosarcomas. And this tend to be one of the most important aspects in the prognosis of chondrosarcomas. Grade 2 is intermediate, and grade 3, it's more aggressive, and it tends to proliferate faster and tends to have a higher chance of spread. And what is the differentiated chondrosarcoma? The differentiated chondrosarcoma is when you have part of the chondrosarcoma that looks very different and part is low grade, meaning that you probably have a low grade chondrosarcoma that is proliferating and some cell acquires a mutation, more commonly a mutation called P53, and then it starts proliferating very fast. So you have this very clear divide when you look under the microscope. And that still tends to be more aggressive than the other types of chondrosarcoma. Then there are special types of chondrosarcoma, such clear cell or mesenchymal chondrosarcoma, that are originated from specific features. For example, mesenchymal chondrosarcoma have a specific fusion that drives and tends to be a very different story than the regular chondrosarcomas that we treat. When they look under the microscope, and although we call chondrosarcoma, we tend to treat similar to another disease called Ewing sarcoma. So meaning that we give a new adjuvant chemotherapy and we do the same types of regimens that we do for Ewing sarcoma. However, similar to different old sarcomas, chondrosarcomas are rare. And the evidence for those managements are somewhat limited because the number of patients that we have. But talking a little bit about management, Dr. Deshpande, can you talk a little bit how you think of like the management of like a new diagnosed patient with chondrosarcoma?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And thank you for going through the different types. I just want to go a little more general than that. So many of our listeners probably have heard of sarcomas, And just to reiterate, we're talking about a type of bone sarcoma, not soft tissue sarcoma. The soft tissue ones are much more common than the bone ones. But Dr. Costa and I are very lucky to be in an institution where we have a sarcoma tumor board. So whenever we see a new patient, we have the ability to discuss that patient with surgeons specialized in treating bone sarcomas, medical oncologists, radiation oncologists, and most importantly, probably pathologists and radiologists who can tell us where the disease is and exactly what it looks like under the microscope and try and put it in one of those categories that Dr. Costa was talking about. I would say for localized disease that you mentioned, probably the best treatment, and this is true, I think, for almost every single solid tumor, is to remove the tumor if possible. And I would say for chondrosarcomas, this is especially important because until recently, as Dr. Costa was saying, we didn't really have a lot of very good treatments for chondrosarcoma. We would kind of borrow some from different other diseases for certain subtypes, but generally, we don't have a go-to chemotherapy or a go-to radiation even that really makes a huge amount of difference. So surgery to remove all of it is the only curative treatment for many of these patients. So if it's localized, definitely they should see an orthopedic sarcoma surgeon, and they should make a decision on whether or not this can be treated upfront with surgery, which is usually the case. If it can be removed, but at the time of the surgery they find it's gone all the way to the edge of where they tried to remove it, then we follow it usually with radiation, depending on the grade, as Dr. Costa was saying. And if it, especially if it's high grade, then we feel that giving radiation will reduce the risk of it coming back. And very, very occasionally, again, depending on the histology, we may follow that with some kind of what we call systemic treatment, which is usually chemotherapy. But we have had some really nice advances just in the last few months in chondrosarcoma, both in terms of trials available and even trials that have given preliminary results. So Dr. Costa, we were part of one of the trials here, right?
We were part of two of the trials, and one is still ongoing. So it is really exciting times for chondrosarcomas. Because it's a rare disease, there tends to be a little bit less research and interest from different companies to position their drugs. But we have been lucky that this scenario is so much changing nowadays. For chondrosarcoma, one of the features that those tumors tend to have, it's a mutation on a gene called IDH1, isocitrate dehydrogenase. And for those of a medical background, I'm sorry for going back to the Krebs cycle.
I have nightmares about that from medical school.
No, we have in the medical education, we have to memorize every enzyme in this Krebs cycle. And we think it's of little utility after we graduate, but here we are talking about the Krebs cycle while we treat patients. So this IDH1 mutation usually converts isocitrate into alpha-ketoglutarate, but when you have this mutation, then it stops converting into alpha-ketoglutarate. It converts into a different enzyme, and this different enzyme changes the metabolism of the cells, making it start proliferating and ultimately driving cancer. So about 40 to 60% have this IDH1 mutation. And now we have some drugs that can block this IDH1. The one that has been tested in chondrosarcoma is ivosidenib. And it has been a phase one trial that has tested about 20 to 30 patients with chondrosarcomas. And what is interesting on that trial is that about 20 to 30% of patients had a response. And they tend to have a more prolonged time to progression than you would usually expect from this type of disease. And it is possible that this type of therapy works a little bit better on lower grade chondrosarcomas, such as grade 1, grade 2. And as mutations start accumulating, there could be still some benefit. But my personal impression is that on lower grade tumors, this type of therapy would be a little bit more appropriate. But what could you do on the higher grade tumors? So there has been another trial that was recently published in a sarcoma meeting called CTOS. And the name of the trial is the Condragon trial. In that population, they compared the new drug to placebo, and it showed that the new drug had increased progression-free survival. But how does the new drug work? So it's a quite interesting mechanism of action of that drug. It's a DR5. So it makes the cancer cells undergo apoptosis. So usually chondrosarcoma cells are somewhat resistant to chemotherapy because they are very resistant to a thing called DNA damage. But at the same time, if you're able to trigger them to kill themselves through apoptosis, then they can start dying. And that's what they saw on the trials, that chondrosarcoma patients derived benefit from this new therapy. And what is good from those two therapies that we discussed is that they were generally safe, and we didn't see many serious adverse events on those trials for those patients. Of course, those therapies are not curative. So if you have chondrosarcoma that is metastatic, they are able to derive some benefit from those therapies. But ultimately, we'll have to think of different treatment strategies for those patients. Besides the new therapies for chondrosarcomas, the treatments that we can give for chondrosarcomas are chemotherapy, and we usually derive from osteosarcoma regimens. But as I mentioned, chondrosarcoma tends to be a little bit resistant to chemotherapies. So we usually give to higher grade or the differentiated chondrosarcomas, and in select cases. More commonly, we give another class of drugs, tyrosine kinase inhibitors, for chondrosarcomas. And there's different types of TKIs that we can give in this population. And the idea is to decrease the probability of the tumor progressing. In other areas of medicine, immunotherapy can also be given in chondrosarcomas, but there are some caveats. Usually, immunotherapy works best on tumors that have high tumor mutation burden. And if you have a low-grade chondrosarcoma, usually it does not have a high tumor mutation burden. But if you have a dedifferentiated chondrosarcoma, then you have more mutations that accumulate. And in this scenario, that's when we start thinking of immunotherapy. Of course, chondrosarcoma does not respond to immunotherapy similar to lung cancer, melanoma, and other diseases, but there could be some still derived benefit from immunotherapy in this disease.
That was great. Thank you for going through all those regimens. If the patient has chondrosarcoma, though, it's difficult to diagnose it, right? Because we're talking about an extremely rare disease, and all of us have times where we have joint pain or bone pain. So what are the sort of things that we should tell primary care providers and oncologists what to look for in these patients, when to take the next step?
One of the things that we tend to see very common in the sarcoma world, and it's somewhat unfortunate, but we know it's a rare disease, is what we call oops surgery, meaning that you'll go and think something is benign and you just try to remove it, and sometimes it comes back as a malignant disease. So the first thing is, like, for primary care doctors and even for patients, if they feel that there is something that is abnormal, if there is a tumor or something that is growing, the first thing is that not to neglect it. And the second one is, if there's some questions about the possibilities, you will need to do most commonly a biopsy. But then it's okay to refer the patient to a tertiary sarcoma center, because some of the times when you do a biopsy, the surgeon, if they have to remove the lesion after, they also have to remove the track of the needle. So if you're thinking of this as a possibility, you can already start doing the referral for a high volume center. It's very important for the architecture of the tumor to be preserved. So the type of needle that they have to go is called a core needle biopsy. So usually you do not prefer to do fine needle biopsies, because the pathologists really need to get the context around. And the other part is that it is very important for the pathologist to be an expert in this disease. In the sarcoma world in general, if you have a non-soft tissue pathologist, doing the evaluation of sarcoma, there is about 30% chance of the diagnosis not being completely accurate. The distinction of, for example, a chondrosarcoma to osteosarcoma or another disease, it's not just a mere curiosity, is going to change all the treatments that we do down the line. After you do the diagnosis, Dr. Deshpande, can you tell me a little bit more about how you usually do the staging of those patients? What is the usually biology of the tumor? How does the tumor behave?
Yeah, no, that's a really good question too. And I think you touched on this when you mentioned about the grade of the tumor. So some of these can be present for years and years and years. And I have one man who I've been referred with a chondrosarcoma who didn't want surgery. And actually, I've just been following him ever since then because his disease hardly grows. But then the other extreme is you have someone whose disease grows very, very quickly. So we do need to make a diagnosis, and I agree with everything you've mentioned about the biopsy and how to do that. And then once you have a biopsy that shows chondrosarcoma, then the main staging we do is an MRI for the primary site. So that's where it started. And that is probably the best test of giving the surgeons especially an idea of exactly where the disease starts and ends. So if they wanted to plan surgery, they can then do that. Sometimes we'll use CAT scans to do that as well. And then we use either CAT scans or PET scans to see has it spread anywhere else. So typically bone sarcomas, if they're going to spread, tend to spread through the blood to the lungs before they spread anywhere else. It's, of course, you can get anything in medicine, especially in cancer medicine, but that's typically the way they spread. And they don't tend to involve lymph nodes. So if you do see a lot of lymph nodes, it doesn't mean it's not a chondrosarcoma, but certainly you have to think, could this be another disease? Because usually we don't see lymph node involvement. So I would say an MRI of the primary site and then either a CAT scan or a PET scan to look elsewhere. And obviously, if they have symptoms somewhere, for instance, headaches, we would do imaging, usually an MRI of the brain or any other site where they have symptoms. But it's sometimes a difficult disease to pick up on imaging. And we're lucky at Yale to have very experienced radiologists as well. So they can look at it and say, this is likely to be a chondrosarcoma, even before they've even seen the biopsy.
As in many sarcomas, we still have many unanswered questions and things that we wished we had more studies. What do you think is going to be the next steps in this disease? What kind of questions or type of studies do you think is important?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And honestly, out of the two of us, I often defer to you because you're in the phase one team. And so I think that's a great resource we have here. We do have, as you mentioned, two new medicines that have either shown great promise in clinical trials or are being involved in clinical trials now. So I do think hopefully both of those will get approved. So that's going to be a great thing for our patients. And going forward, you mentioned immunotherapy. People have tried to target immunotherapy a little bit more than just using the traditional, what we call checkpoint inhibitors, things like Keytruda and Opdivo. But now they're trying to find out if there's a protein on the cancer cell that can be used as a target for immune cells. So they actually engineer specific immune cells to go after them. This has been a very successful concept in the treatment of certain lymphomas and in a different type of sarcoma called synovial sarcoma, as long as they have these particular proteins. But I do think maybe that might be another way going forward that we treat a lot of our sarcomas, including chondrosarcomas. To me, that would be a great treatment for patients if we can find the right protein, find the right way of harnessing the immune system, as Dr. Koster already mentioned, there are some problems with that because of how the chondrosarcomas grow. But I do think that that might be one of our new treatments.
Talking about proteins on the surface of the cells, this is a very interesting area. For example, many sarcomas in general, they express a certain types of proteins that we can target with antibody drug conjugates. V7H3 is commonly expressed in sarcomas in general, including bone sarcomas. And there are a few companies such as Merck and GSK that have products on those areas. So this is a potential interesting area. Another one is LRRC15, which is also a protein that is commonly expressed on fibroblasts. And it tends to also be present in chondrosarcomas. And we're opening a phase 1 clinical trial here at Yale. The pros of such therapy is that the protein tends to be expressed. And as I previously mentioned, chondrosarcomas are a little bit resistant to DNA damage, and they carry a type of payload, which is a topoisomerase payload. So it's unsure if the traditional resistance is still going to take place, or if the fact that we're targeting much closer at a higher dose, maybe we can overcome that resistance. Also, in the phase 1 department, there is drugs called PRMT5 inhibitors that are commonly given in tumors that have a type of mutation called MTAP loss. MTAP loss tends to be common in chondrosarcomas, and it's another avenue that we can exploit in this disease. Besides the metastatic setting, I wonder how those drugs would behave in, for example, neoadjuvant setting. Let's say you try to give the DR5 drug before you go for surgery. Would it shrink and make usually an amputation be changed to what we call limb salvage surgery? Or could you give it after surgery and then reduce the risk of metastatic spread? Or could you even combine the two? If IDH1 inhibitors would work on lower grade tumors and DR5 would work on higher grade tumors, maybe there's a rationale of combining those therapies, or should you give them in sequence? There's also interesting thoughts is, for example, IDH1 inhibitors, they may be good in combination with immunotherapy. And this combination has been tested at a somewhat limited setting for cholangiocarcinomas, another disease. But it seems that it was safe in that setting. So maybe the combination of IDH1 inhibitors with immunotherapy could be an interesting strategy, for example, in the differentiated chondrosarcomas. Or even you could combine DR5 with chemotherapies. So at the same time, you're trying to target DNA damage in the traditional form, but also trying to induce apoptosis. So those are possible avenues that we could explore. But more importantly, I think for the disease, is to understand the biology of the disease. As I mentioned, big breakthroughs in medicine are somewhat rare, but they only happen if you're able to understand the biology. If you're not able to understand the biology, you're not able to formulate targets, and you're never able to proceed with new innovations. And there's still so many questions in the biology of chondrosarcomas that we have to understand. For example, I was mentioning we have a type of chondrosarcoma that is called mesenchymal chondrosarcoma that has a very particular fusion. But what does that fusion do? And at the same time, if you have a very particular fusion, could you target the fusion? Because it's always the same type of fusion that you have in different cancers. Also, as I mentioned, we have an idea of how IDH1 drives cancer, but we still don't have the complete picture. So further study how IDH1 mutations can drive cancer and what happens after a while or when other mutations are acquired. Do they lose the dependency on IDH1, or does IDH1 still plays a role? So all of those mechanistic questions are very important for us to understand if we truly want to move the field forward. Now, I think an important message as well is that we're talking about chondrosarcoma awareness and patient advocacy groups such as the Chondrosarcoma Foundation. They're a very important resource for everyone, for the patients itself. They have a diagnosis of a very rare disease, and they're feeling lost, and they're like looking on the internet, and they're not sure where to go next. Those patient advocacy groups are a good source for like reliable information for the patients, a good source for them to know what to do next. They are also a very good source for physicians in general, because when we're designing our clinical trials, we have to have the patient in the center. They are the primary stakeholders on the clinical trials. So it's good for us to talk with the organizations to see if we are doing the things that are going to benefit the patient the most. And also, they support science. Sometimes they have some research funding that they help in rare diseases. As I mentioned, all the funding, either from governmental bodies such as the NIH or even private fundings from industry, tends to always go to breast cancer, lung cancer, and sarcomas tend to be left behind. And those organizations are like fundamental to push a little bit towards our field.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And I would definitely push the Chondrosarcoma Foundation. I think they're a great group. They used to have an annual meeting that would allow patients to be part of. I know when it was virtual, I do find that a very good resource.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of Enclave on Air. Check back throughout the week for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit enclave.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. Enclave is also on social media. On X and Blue Sky, follow us at Enclave. On Facebook, like us at Enclave and follow our Enclave page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of Enclave on Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you're there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to Enclave on Air.